Let's get ready for Noreen Ehrlich, success and relationship coach who inspires her audience to ignore conventional wisdom in order to create true success. You are now listening to Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Defy and Hustle. We've got a wonderful, incredible program. We have an really admirable special guest in the room today. So welcome to the show. I am thrilled to talk to you tonight. It's a beautiful day here in Greenwich, Connecticut. We are on the corner of Lewis and Mason Street here, and we have a room full of people. We have Josh, our engineer, as always. So Josh is in the room. Tonight we have co-hosting the show, Daisy Mello. So hello, Daisy.
Oh, hey.
We have Dana Hendrickson, who comes in, and she'll be in and out of the conversation tonight. And she's wonderful, and she's taking pictures of me as I'm talking to you. So welcome, Dana. And then we have our special guest tonight. Hopefully you saw her on our social media or her social media. It's Christina Schweffel. And Christina is a Greenwich local, and she is absolutely amazing because she is, well, a whole variety of things which we have to get into here, but she has gotten her PhD in consulting psychology. Counseling psychology. Mm-hmm. I can't read my own handwriting. And then you're an adjunct professor at Teachers College at Columbia University.
Yes.
And you are a wife, a mother of four children under the age of 10.
Yes.
And you also are the owner of Go Figure Bar Studios,
yes,
which are based in, there's six locations as far as I know. So there's Rye, Rye, New York,
yep,
Armonk, New York, Greenwich, Connecticut,
Darien,
New Canaan, and Nantucket.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're just a phenomenal woman, and just so that the listeners know a little bit more about me again, since my show's fairly new, I do life coaching, and I work with people. When I talk about ignoring conventional wisdom, it's because so many of us, especially if we were born in the 50s, 60s, 70s, we were brought up with this idea that we were in survival mode, and we were supposed to go out there and get a job and get married and live happily ever after, but that didn't always happen for people. And there's a shift that's taking place now where people are starting to take their power back and realize we have a certain amount of energy given to us each day. We have a certain amount of time ahead of us on this planet, and we want to go out there and be ourselves. We were gifted a certain amount of talents and passions, and we want to step out now with those passions and really put them out into the world. We want it to be lucrative for us. We want it to be fun for us. We want it to overflow and help others. And this is starting to really start to surge, I believe, in all communities around the globe. And so when I work with people, I'm helping them to release some of their patterning that might scare them into staying, for example, in a job that they're not happy in any longer, and then to do that at a rate that's comfortable for them. It could be relationships that have served their purpose, but now they need to change into another form, and so they can go on and find something that's more suitable for the person they are in now. It could be about health issues where they're not taking care of their health, time and money management, time and money growth, and really personal and spiritual development. So I work with my clients around any of all of those. The men usually come to me with more career-related issues, and I help them get very clear, who do you intend to be a year from now, and what can we do in the next 100 days to start to get that moving? And women come to me with both professional and career-ish and personal issues where they're trying to find, many of them are very successful, but they're trying to find the love of their lives, and they're having a tricky time. Basically, we as humans run patterns, and we're not always sure why we run these patterns, but we run these patterns, and we have to start to make those patterns conscious so that we can start to work with them, transmute them, so that they don't overtake us, and also get very clear about the direction we're going in so that we can stay on a path. And a coach is somebody who will help guide you. will help you get clarity, because it's hard to see the picture in the frame. It's hard to see what's going on with you. Other people might see it. But a coach will be somebody who can be a confidant, who will help you get clarity about what direction you want to take, and help you really go on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. What steps can I take me in the direction I want to go? There's a certain amount of action that you'll have to take, and then there's a certain amount of receptivity that we have to learn, despite being brought up in a very driven culture, especially here in the Northeast, where we're like, go, 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 go. So with all that in mind, what I love about Christina Schweffel is she is doing everything. I mean, I don't want to like embarrass you or anything, but you are so admirable because, first of all, I wanted to ask you about what made you choose to study gender issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really long answer, so I'll try to give you the abridged version.
Okay.
But when I, in college, my major was English and also education. And so my goal was to become a secondary school teacher. And throughout my studies in undergrad, I was very interested in much less learning and teaching and much more what was going on with the students. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand that I was interested in that. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. So in Massachusetts, where I was, you have to get a master's within 5 years in order to keep your teacher certification. So myself, being a senior in college, I thought, if I don't apply now for a master's, I'll never go back. Because I thought when school was done, that was it. I did not see myself as being somebody who could or would do any more schooling. And I knew very little about graduate school. So I applied, and I applied to a number of programs in Massachusetts that were masters in education. And I did apply to Harvard's Graduate School of Education. And on the application, there was a little box that said gender concentration. I thought to myself, well, I'm very interested in women and girls' development. I didn't know that at the time, but I checked the box. And it was a very, very serendipitous thing that I happened to check that box, because when I got into that program, at that time, Carol Gilligan was still on faculty there at Harvard, and anybody who checked that box became her mentee. There was only 6 of us. So if you're not familiar with Carol, she is a absolute force in the field of developmental psychology. She's a groundbreaking theorist around women and girls' psyche and how their psyche develops. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book called, I'm going to say it wrong, so I shouldn't say it at all. But whatever the text is, it was a major milestone text in the field because it was a departure from the existing understandings, which had all been based on male experience and male lived experience.
What is that?
I can't remember the name.
No, I'm not. Well, oh, not the name of the book, but what does that mean?
So, okay, so yes, exactly.
From
so,
what?
So it was a departure from the existing theorists who had talked about the way that people develop. And what she said was for girls around the age of 12, girls start to stifle that voice that we have inside us and their true opinion. She said that true opinion starts to go underground for girls around the age of 12.
And why?
Sometimes younger. Because there's social norms around what we expect girls to be and to say and to do. Mm-hmm. And so Carol's work was bringing that notion to the forefront of the voice inside and allowing that voice to flourish rather than to be, you know, stomped out. Mm-hmm. So I had the extreme privilege and benefit of studying with her in a small intimate group at Harvard, where I thought I was going for a brief foray into graduate school to quickly stamp myself and get out and become a teacher. And it was actually Carol about halfway through the year that said to me, Christina, did you notice you didn't take any learning and teaching classes? She said, they're all psychology. And I said, oh. And she said, your interest is in the person and not in how to teach the person. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I said, oh, yeah, that is my interest. What do I do now? Right? And she said, well, you keep going to school, which was literally at the time mind-blowing concept for me. I had thought I was going to be going right to work. And I don't have my father is a dentist and my brother followed in his footsteps, but I don't have any female in my family that has a higher education degree. Mm-hmm. And so it had really never occurred to me. And with Carol's guidance, and that's what, you know, these days I understand it as an intervening force for her. Her mentorship was a life-changing relationship for me. Mm-hmm. In that my pattern would have been to go to teach, and that's what you do. And Carol steered me another direction, and I ended up working for 1 year in the eating disorder research lab at Harvard's undergrad with another very influential mentor, Pamela Keel. And while I was there, eating disorders are a gendered issue. It's not to say that men don't experience eating disorders. They do. And the research shows us that actually gay men disproportionately experience them more than heterosexual men. But they do happen to be an overwhelmingly female issue.
Did you have any exposure to any of these issues as a girl growing up?
Well, no. So it's a great question. So again, I'm raised Italian-American, and in a very culturally strong Italian family. What I mean by that is that my relatives all lived on the same street in Boston. So my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, we were all raised together. And food was love. Mm-hmm. So there was no dieting. There was no talk amongst the women in my family about wanting to be thin. There was no exposure at all for me to anything related to an eating disorder. There was a lot of eating.
That was the disorder.
A lot of eating. My grandmother taught me to cook, and that was an important aspect of my relationship with her. We had mostly boys in the family, myself and one female cousin, and she's about 14 years older than me. And so it was passed on to me how to make certain Southern Italian dishes. And it wasn't until I attended a private all-girls school, which had a very different composition than my neighborhood growing up, mm-hmm. where I started hearing about methods to lose weight. I still remember a very good friend of mine. I remember her 16th birthday, that her mother gave her a scale and some diet pills. And she was not overweight.
Thanks, Mom.
Right.
Thanks for your confidence in me.
It does. And, you know, at the time, it didn't mean much to me. And again, I was an adolescent, and so my brain was not thinking in these ways. It was later in life, as I studied to become a psychologist, and I studied gender, that I looked back on these experiences and realized that my upbringing was very protective for me. It was mm-hmm. protective about how I feel about food. Mm-hmm. It protected me also about my strong self-concept around my body, because all I had was people around me encouraging me to eat and to explore eating, that there were so many wonderful things you could do with food, and how much food brings people together, and it's celebratory, and it's not to feel guilty about or to wish you had eaten less. It's about experiencing it.
But so. What's really going – so you were talking mm-hmm. about 12-year-olds, for example, mm-hmm. and what mm-hmm. starts to happen to 12-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. What I deal with this too. When I work with people, they're running patterns mm-hmm. – especially the women are running patterns that around puberty mm-hmm. when there's a lot of pressure to become beautiful,
yes.
even if they're very intelligent. Mm-hmm. And I even think this happened to me, mm-hmm. that intelligence suddenly doesn't matter. You could
right.
be doing very well in school, mm-hmm. but suddenly you're not looking mm-hmm. very pretty. Mm-hmm. And you start to shift your priorities around
yes.
what's important
yes.
and how you'll find acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And that continues even as society keeps perpetuating onto women. You have to be beautiful, otherwise you're not going to mm-hmm. be validated and
or
loved
successful.
By men. Or successful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a truth to it, too, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but it's a lot of pressure on, and there's a lot of women in the room here, there's a lot of pressure on us to, mm-hmm. we want to be beautiful, but we want to be beautiful for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But my question for you is, so what is going through the mind of the young girl or the young woman mm-hmm. that is starting to have an eating disorder?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it'd be a hard one to answer because the origins of that will be different for so many people. But if we are looking at Carol's work, and I remember it's called In a Different Voice, it's published about 1984. But if you look at her work, what she's suggesting is that the voice of the shoulds starts to take precedence over the voice of how I feel, or maybe even what my talents are. I was very fortunate that I left the school I was in and started at an all-girls school around the age of 10. And in that environment, it fostered finding one's talent. That's what the school did. Whether that was pottery or lacrosse or Spanish, it was an environment that invited us to keep that other voice very much alive and part of the process of development. And I think what happens for many girls and women is that they're in environments that suppress the authentic voice and instead encourage the more superficial voice of your focus should be on your appearance. Your focus should be on how you look and less about how you feel.
Right. A lot of women start acting cool. And when I coach women, they can be in their late 30s. They still got like, I'll be the cool girl or I'll be the pretty girl, or they're over sexualized or they're repressing it. Mm-hmm. And so they keep attracting the type of people that would perpetuate that insecurity. Mm-hmm. So men and women, we all wear masks as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
It takes time to unpeel them. What masks are we wearing? Mm-hmm. And are they working for us? Because at some point they work for us for a little while, and then when we really start to get into relationships of any kind, they stop working for us. And that's when people usually come to see me, is when they're at a crossroads about something that they really want to be in a relationship, or they're getting jobs and they just keep losing them. Mm-hmm. And we have to go in there and try and figure out what the pattern's on, and even go in and heal that inner child. I know this would be like a therapist, but a life coach is going to do the same thing. Go back and try and figure out, where did this start, and see if we can go find that energy that's in you that's still alive and that is driving your behavior, even though you're old enough now to know better and you have a lot of talents to put out there. So I do think women and men, we have our different conditioning that society puts on us, and that there's a lot of pressure on women too, and young girls, to really conform and be fun and beautiful and attractive. I want to come over to Daisy, because Daisy's sitting over there, and I introduced her very quickly. But Daisy, so you know both Christina and I.
Yeah, I do.
And so Daisy, why don't you just introduce yourself a little bit more and talk a little bit about, you know, what you're feeling like when you hear us talking about.
Well, no, I'm just curious about, I don't want to talk about me, it's fine. no, but I'm curious as to, like, it's interesting to hear all these things, because I have worked with you and I have worked with you, how it correlates to you owning the Go Figure Studios, like how that came about with everything that you've studied and stuff, why you chose to own those, like with the teaching, like, because you could have just been a professor. You could have been like, I'm just gonna, you know, teach people this and the psychology, but what made you choose that?
I get asked that a lot, and I'm gonna keep it succinct.
Oh, I'm so basic.
I'm gonna keep it succinct for you. I'm gonna try my best. But when I was a doctoral student in the city, I ended up getting a yoga certification, and that was an important process for me as a graduate student to have a practice that was outside of psychology that would allow me to physically allow my body to relax, and also to have a practice that just let me turn my mind inward. Because in graduate school for psychology, you're asked to look at yourself over and over again, which is actually extremely helpful for myself as a person, but I also needed an outlet. And so I ended up going through a yoga certification, which is a pretty intense process. And I loved it. I loved the practice, and I loved teaching yoga. And I thought, I like this. I just wish it had a little bit more. I wish it had hand weights. I wish I was doing some weight work. It was like very into, and my then boyfriend, now husband, was a collegiate athlete, and he was very into lifting and so he taught me a tremendous amount about working out, really. And so I thought, well, yoga's missing it's missing some of the plyos and it's the plyometrics. It's missing some of the isometrics. Like, I like that stuff and I don't want to give that up.
Yeah.
I want that to be part of my practice. So I created this class called Yoga Sculpt.
Oh.
Yes. And I taught it at a place called Mango on 34th Street. And at that time, I was, you know, I think I'm running around now. I was really running around then. I would teach in the morning, go up to take classes, come back and teach. But yet, I was extremely busy but fulfilled. And I thought, okay, I need another exercise. There's got to be another exercise out there.
Yeah.
So I went for a Pilates certification. And I got my Pilates certification, and I thought, this is cool. I like the machines. I like the core aspect. Too much core. I just don't want to work my core that much, you know? It's just like, it's kind of like, you know, Goldilocks. Like, I like this one too hot, that one too cold, you know? And one day, I saw an ad for an audition for Physique 57, which was a bar fitness method in the city, one of the originals. And I went to the audition. And I went to class first, then I auditioned. But in the class, I thought, just right. This, for me, is – it's got stretch. It's got core. It's got weight. This is – felt like home.
Yeah.
You know, which is exactly how I felt in my academic experience with Carol, which was it felt right. I felt I'm home. And so I didn't – I ended up teaching for a while, not at Physique. I ended up teaching my own method privately, early morning and evening, with my internship in the middle of the day. And I was in private practice. And then I moved out to Connecticut. And I thought, all right, I did become a professor on a tenure line at University of Hartford. And I figured, well, my exercise career is probably over. Now I'll just be a student, which will be fun for me, you know, to actually take class.
How many kids did you have at that point?
I only had one.
Oh, okay.
And I said, I'll take class and I'll be, you know, and I'll be a professor and I'll take class and it will be all good.
Yeah.
And I had Henry, my firstborn, and I should back up a little bit also. I had a tremendous curvature in my spine in my youth. And so at the age of 14, I had a curve in my thoracic and then a more extreme curve in my lumbar spine. So it's just the middle and the bottom of the back. And it was so extreme that I was about 2 degrees away from mandatory spinal surgery. So I wore this brace. It was a big plastic brace. Made me very popular, as you can imagine. Yeah. It was from, you know, the top of the rib cage all the way to my waistline. But so I suffered with back issues for years. And yoga had really brought a new level of understanding of the spine to me. And long story short, I continued to find that I could get my spine into alignment with a bar fitness practice.
Oh. Hold on, Christina. And,
yeah.
I want you to keep going.
I know. I told you I was going to give you the short
version. No. We just have to go to break.
Yes,
actually,
please.
Believe it or not, the time is going by very quickly. Yeah. It's wonderful. Everybody, come right back. It's Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich, and we're here with Christina Schweffel. Welcome back, everybody. We're here at Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich. We're in the studio in Greenwich, Connecticut, and we have in the room with us Josh. He's the engineer. We have Daisy Mello, who's co-hosting with me today.
Hello.
We have Dana Hendrickson, who's in here smiling and looking beautiful and taking pictures right now. And then we have our special guest, Christina Schweffel, who is the owner of Go Figure Bar Studios, which there's six of them, in the New York, Nantucket, and Connecticut area. So Christina was telling us how she got into going into the Go Figure Bar Studios business. Is it a franchise or you own them?
No, I own all of them.
Okay. So what I wanted to talk about, which I talked to my clients about, there's two topics initially that come up when I think of you. Being, when I talk with my clients, I have to try and get them to be honest with themselves about where their passions and talents lie. Mm-hmm. And to go for that versus trying to stay secure in working for some other organization or something that feels safe, because we were brought up, many of us, with a lot of fear around survival or losing our money. Mm-hmm. And people think if they go into a business of their own, then they wouldn't know what they're doing and they won't be able to handle it. Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to talk to you. You're a teacher at Columbia, a teacher's college at Columbia University. Your wife, you're the mother of four children under 10. Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to talk to you about the importance of managing time. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can start to talk about those subjects.
Okay, sure. And I'll try to relate it to what we were saying before the break, which is that I moved to Connecticut, and I ended up taking a class at Go Figure when it was in Westport, which it is no longer. And there was a magical moment there in that particular studio because this method was so spine healthy. And it actually, if you like bar fitness, you'll know about round back, flat back. And I won't get into that today, but that's a particular abdominal sequence that many places teach and we do not. And it is a very challenging position, very difficult to get into with or without a previous back injury. So I fell in love with this particular method. And I did feel a passion for a fitness method that was able to address posture for me. That was what made it a different experience.
I can see, honestly, the way you're seated in your chair,
yeah.
You have a perfect posture. It's true. You're making me sit up straight.
Well, you're going to come into class. I'm going to get you into class.
Yes. Now Daisy's sitting up straight.
I know.
When I ended up opening the Nantucket studio 5 years ago, and that was when Cindy Seitz was the founder of the Figure Method, and she opened in 2001 in Greenwich. And I opened Nantucket under her ownership 5 years ago. And then 3 years ago, I acquired the intellectual property of the method and the business. And we're in the process of a rebrand. That rebrand is very related to the passion piece. So for me, I wanted a name and a method that was more focused on postural alignment. Mm-hmm. The new name will be Form, because our instructional staff is always talking about form, finding your form. And we have a huge continuing education program. We meet with physical therapists, classical ballet technique experts, where all we do is talk about the plumb line of the body and how to set people up in positions correctly and help them find muscle in their body. And just as you were speaking about patterns that people develop and fall into in their lives, so do we have postural patterns. Mm-hmm. So we have patterns of the hip. You hold a baby on one side, for example, all the time, you're going to start to build those muscles on your left or right side and develop an uneven hip. Oftentimes we sit a certain way. Unfortunately, today, with all the time we spend on cell phones, our shoulders are rounded forward, mm-hmm. and there's very little opportunity to correct those posture lines. So it's a little nerdy, but you've probably already garnered by now. I am a huge nerd, so I am very turned on by nerdy. And so I like an exercise method that is intellectual, that's intense, that is research driven. In the last 3 years, we have depended upon research to help us understand biomechanics and aligning people correctly. It's a real departure from what's out there in terms of other bar classes and even other fitness methods, because we take the positioning so and the anatomy so seriously. So there's the passion. That's what's driving the rebrand. You'll see a new name, new look.
So just to make it clear, the new name?
Form Bar Fitness.
Form
it's
Bar
spelled
Fitness.
With an E on the end because it's kind of nice. It's the French word for form, and it also, one of the derivatives is figure. So it's a nod to the old name and also a looking forward. So that is the passion that I have for postural alignment is driving the rebrand and driving the new name. And we have a very exciting number of products that we'll be launching in 2019 that I've been working on for 2.5 years. I've been developing that are related to form, to finding your form in our method. Mm-hmm. And so the name comes at this time also very purposely because I know that those products are coming to us sooner than later. And so the whole thing will coalesce.
Are you planning, just out of curiosity, are you planning on expanding? You have 6 studios now.
Yes, the lawyer would be, this stomach would be turning right now, but we have just signed a lease in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts.
Oh, good for you.
So we are not supposed to announce that until they have countersigned. Well. But I feel it's been going, that negotiation went on for almost 8 months. So
is
I feel.
In your neighborhood?
That is in, it's close, very close. I could throw a stone home, actually, which is a brilliant thing. It's a really very cool development called The Street, and it is very close to home.
What's your goal?
going out a year, you talked about 2019. Ideally, what would be going on with your business in 2019?
Ideally, in an ideal world, we would see at least two new innovative products come to the marketplace that we have developed that are completely custom, that bring people into better form and give people real-time feedback on their form during class. And the second goal, which I don't think will be 2019, but it would be amazing if it was, is for us to launch an online, completely online studio. And I don't want to see that happen until the products are in place and working. We're at the prototype phase. And so as anyone out there, any inventor out there knows, prototype phase, it can go great. It can also go the other way and not work out so well. So I could be sitting here a year from now and we have a new prototype. I hope that won't happen. But I just don't want to do the online component until I have the
So somebody would be you'd log into a class and you'd get led through a class. That's what I do with my clients.
Exactly. So I'd love to see us go there.
Just so people can find you now. Can they find you? What would be the best way to find you now and look at your classes?
The best way to find us information-wise would be the website, which right now is still under the old domain. So it's gofigurestudio.com. And I think our Instagram account is a beautiful depiction of what we offer. We have the Nantucket account, which is under the new name. So that's the handle is form with an E dot Nantucket. And then the handle for the main business is at gofigurestudios, all one word. And I think that's a lot of information about what the method looks like and what we value. And, you know, Instagram is very powerful. It's a really fascinating branding tool. It's a beast to be reckoned with. It's changed marketing. It's really fascinating. And I think that it does tell a brand story. And I believe ours is there.
I went into your studio here in Greenwich the other day, and I'll come back
again. I wish I had been there.
The woman who was at the desk, it was Lottie, so much admiration for you. And one of the other themes when I work with my clients is how to be a leader, how to be a class act. And she had so many beautiful things to say about you, your business, how you operate. What advice would you give to people who are entrepreneurs or even just the way they operate in their everyday lives that you think – what advice would you give them about being a class act?
I think entrepreneurship can be lonely. It can be it's you never know if you're going to succeed. There's no definite this is going to work. So there's some fear there around taking chances. And I think that the most important thing, just as you were saying, is to stay close to the passion so that whether or not you succeed or you fail, you're doing something you love. And that's how I feel about it. I don't know that these products I'm alluding to are even ever going to make it to market, but I have so loved the process of trying, and I have no regret. And I think that when you love what you do and you value the people around you, you feel it.
With the key on valuing the people around you, too. Because
it's a team. We're a team.
You could just see on your website, and you could see from the woman I met, and just the caliber of the studio that I was in, the one on Putnam Avenue in Greenwich, that you have a certain polish about you and a certain goal in mind for the clients, that you're delivering a beautiful product to them. And there's you can even in your conversation, how much passion, research, and commitment you have to making sure this is something that people get a result from.
Definitely.
And that sounds like it's mind, body, and spirit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There is a huge aesthetic benefit. It works. Mm-hmm. It's a method that works. You will see your body change, but that's just a small piece of it for us. Your back will feel better. Your hips and pelvis will be in alignment. You will understand your own spinal alignment when you're sitting in your car, right? And so these are all benefits that it's hard to put into words what you're giving somebody, especially as we age. We get a little shorter, our bone density. So to work on those aspects it's a gift that keeps giving. And there's a reason why if you come into class, which I hope you will, you will see that class ranges with participants are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. I just taught a woman in Nantucket last week, very dedicated client. She is 85 years old.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And she is incredible. Probably, right? She looks incredible. She is stronger than ever. And it's I always have called it a lifespan method. It's a method for the lifespan.
What's that?
We never talked about the time management, which I want to make sure we get to that.
Well, I do want to talk about it. All right, let's talk about time management because at the end of the day, one of the things I teach people is you can call it time or money management. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the way I look at it is each day we wake up with a certain amount of energy allocated to us, if you will, and you have to divide that up and chop it up and to fit into the hours that we're given. It does seem like time is speeding up. So that's why I tell people, please – decide who you intend to be, the best version that you can find, the happiest, most passionate person, so that when you come out of bed in the morning, you are committed to a life well lived. Mm-hmm. And you have got a lot of wonderful, well, it sounds like a life well lived, but a lot on your plate. So why don't you talk to our audience about time management?
I think it's exactly as you said, as being able to forecast the day and divide up what you need to do. And just one thing I would interject would be that it's okay to do things for you. So if you love a certain coffee, go get it and take 10 minutes to enjoy it without your phone on or without driving while you're drinking it. I think we're so focused on to-do lists and getting here and there and dividing our energy up that we neglect the internal world that we have. I'm very, very into transcendental meditation.
I was just about to ask you, as am I.
So interested. And I was trained in that just recently. I did that on purpose because I could feel myself. I could feel myself losing myself, just losing the ability to stop and feel in the moment. You know, it's all about capturing it on, you know, even with the kids, it's getting a picture of it when it's happening. No. Experience the baby walking for the first time. Experience it. And then maybe record it the next time so that you can watch it again. You know what I mean? But to be in the moment is so challenging. And I'm speaking, you know, about myself first and foremost. But I do think that part of time management is valuing yourself and structuring in time for you and not feeling guilty about it.
I have a question. Do you think that people that do that, the baby's walking camera in their hands and stuff, do you think that's them not capturing the moment? Like that's them just capturing it for other people, essentially?
Well, no, I think, okay, let's take my husband, for example, really big sentimentalist, like the biggest I've ever met, which is so endearing. But he's behind the camera. He doesn't want to miss a moment. He wants to get it all captured. And he misses it because he's trying to capture it. And he's not capturing it for anybody but himself and what he pictures to be the child later in life wanting to look back on it.
Oh.
So it's a very selfless move in many ways. But I think there's something watching a baby get up on 2 feet for the first time and take steps. If you're with your phone, even if you're looking, or a camera, you're missing the experience of what it's like to walk for the first time.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
You're not, it's not just you connecting with that moment. It's
eye contact with the baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, God forbid he or she falls, you want to be there. I mean, that's a more of a logistical thing, but it's just, it's about being in the moment, being present, be at the recital, just be there and watch your child's reaction as they're waiting and when they come out and what they do and just allowing yourself to, it's okay. I don't have to capture this.
Yeah.
I can just experience it.
I feel like it's so much harder to do now.
So much harder. I totally agree. I mean, like I said, I'm talking to myself, you know, first and foremost. But I do think that, you know, no one can do it at all. Nobody can be everything well.
Don't you find, so I'm interested in you doing transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. They talk about TM. Mm-hmm. And it's so simple because it's not having you do
so
any
simple
visualizations.
No. In fact, they don't want you to do that.
No, they're just clear mind, 20 minutes, twice a day, preferably, as soon as you wake up, which means take a little time to do the meditation, 20 minutes.
I can never do that. I told my teacher, I can't do it when I wake up. I'm too inundated.
Outside in the morning. morning with coffee and listen to the birds.
Nice.
And I really do try to clear my mind. I read inspirational quotes.
Okay. See? Nice.
Well, when you do the TM, they say, the people who teach you will say also it wakes up your inner CEO and things just start to fall into place. Yes. So there's not this energy that I'm having to do this all myself and I have to get going and I'm already behind schedule. It's as if it wakes up a part of your brain. It does wake up a part of your brain that just lets things unfold more or less. I mean, sometimes easier said than done, but versus not doing meditation. So I do that, and it just relaxes your body, and there's this more of a flow into life. And then you can only do so many things in a day.
It's true.
And what I do is tell everybody, this is make a list of just what you were going to do today.
Yes.
Everything else that you'd like to do or you know should get done, put on a second list.
Right. Exactly.
And somehow, even in a second column, and just delegate that, I call it, to the producer.
Sure.
I like a media, so I call everything with the producer and an engineer. But delegate that to the producer, and somehow or another, you'll see that either you'll get it done or somebody will call you and tell you. I had put a vacuum cleaner. I needed a vacuum cleaner, and then somebody called me up and said, hey, I just got you a vacuum cleaner. I was like, thank you.
Check it out.
Yeah. So there is a way to delegate. Do you believe, Christina, that there's some – that we're in more of a co-creation with something larger than
– Yeah, you mean religiously? Like
not in a religious way, spiritual. But in a spiritual way, like mindfulness. And
I do. I mean, I'm God-fearing. You know, I pray, and I pray for others. I pray for my family. I pray for myself. And I do that without even thinking. So I know it's in me. When there's a difficult situation, I will pray. Now, I went to Catholic school most of my life, and so they will. That's probably also in me.
Definitely.
Yeah, you get down and you pray. But that does bring me a sense of balance and peace to feel that there's a higher power and to feel that there is a control. It's not all random, and that I feel good about that. I don't know. I can't say much more about it because I wouldn't consider myself very religious, but I do consider myself to believe in the structure of God and that it's real.
There's something that goes beyond us trying to control everything individually, and so that there's a sense of release that you can have an intention. So when I work with my clients, I say, have an intention for what you want, and then life will start to bring you the opportunities once it knows what direction you want to go in.
Yeah.
And then you have to make a decision, set an intention, and then start to pay attention because the opportunities will come, and you're looking for those opportunities, and you're taking action on them.
Absolutely.
As the opportunities show up, you're going to have to take some action, and then when there's not a time to take action being a very masculine thing, and then you go into a more receptive mode and just wait till the next thing goes on. So it's like we don't have to be in this. I was working on Wall Street for almost two decades as the CFO, and it was very, very driven, and we had just so much to get done. It was I've always been a bit of a visionary, so I could start up businesses, but there was so much just go, 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 go. And it wasn't until I hit my 40s that I started to realize, oh, wait a minute, I can relax. And I noticed opportunities, people, money, everything still started to come to me. I still work, but there wasn't there was an understanding that something I had been brought up believing, which is you constantly had to be in action, was not true. That there was a truth to taking action and then relaxing and letting it be and knowing that with your intention, it will come to you.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I would add that when you do pause or refresh, that you might come into a situation with a new perspective or with fresh eyes or be a better, more restored version of yourself. And so then you'll have an interaction that might create an opportunity because you're not stressed and you're not going.
Right, creating some sort of resistance or it's really a lot of it's just we're not always conscious of it, but a lot of it's just fear-based that's making us think that there's
I want to say an unworthiness if we don't keep in motion, that something will fall out from under under us.
I want to know how you manage your time then. How do you manage? You have so much going on. Then how do you decide?
let's be completely honest. 5 minutes before this broadcast started, I was out in the parking lot changing from the clothes I taught in. I taught this morning. I taught Echo Figure, and I was out in the parking lot here changing because I just had my son at a reading comprehension, and it was important to me to be with him for that, and then drove over here and changed in the parking lot. So,
if you're near Lewis, so you got a nice show.
So I don't know if I'm the model for time management, but I know Noreen is going to definitely love class because we talk all about intentional movement.
Okay, good.
And we even talk about setting intention for the next part. So when we're restoring from push-ups, let's say, we'll say, set your intention for the next part of class, which is going to be challenging and intense.
But okay,
get
good.
Yourself in a mindset. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of connections. Like a lot of things you're saying are directly related to how we teach.
It's maybe what I do is on a more emotional.
Exactly.
You're doing
physical.
Physical. Mm-hmm. And I'm going in and saying the emotions are the next frontier that we have to deal with, especially men, and I'll get into that in another one. But getting into the emotional and working our emotional muscles so that those emotions that we've dealt with that drive often patterns that sabotage our success, now we start to work those muscles out so that we are centered. And part of that centeredness is being in control of your health, your nutrition, your body, respecting your body. Mm-hmm. And so we love the fact that you came here today.
Thank you for having
me. You are really quite an admirable woman, and we wish you the best. Please let our listeners know one more time how they can find you online.
Great. It's www.gofigurestudio.com, or on Instagram, it's at gofigurebarstudios. And bar is B-A-R-R-E. It's the French word for ballet bar.
Not the bar like at the corner.
Not the bar that we go to for a different kind of release. Right, exactly.
Okay, Daisy. Thank you, because she's
thank you, Daisy. without Daisy, I would be lost.
Daisy,
so I will thank Daisy on the radio publicly. I think she is phenomenal.
I'm very
appreciative.
I'm not getting fired today.
Oh, never, not for me. You're with me for life, sister. If you'll stay,
Daisy is somebody who helps out both Christina and I. Mm-hmm. So she works with some really incredible people, A-tier clients. I'll include myself in that.
I decided to call myself concierge.
You are a concierge.
Because I feel like calling myself a personal assistant is putting me in this one realm. And I'm like, but that's not all that I do. No. So how much time do you have? Because I can just talk forever.
2 minutes.
No,
don't listen to me.
No. But it's for me, it's a good thing. I love helping people because people like Christina, people like Noreen, it's just at the end of the day, I'm giving you some value to your life, which is time. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can't replace.
Nope.
And I'm it's nice that I know that I'm giving them that time to research this or do this or run this errand, whatever it is. It's a value that's irreplaceable. And I feel fortunate that I get to work with great people. So I feel lucky. So.
You are the very best.
You really are. To be honest with you, and we'll sign off in a second here, Daisy is the one. She knows that I need to get grounded and get something. She'll send over, here's the research. Here's the start of a script. She's wonderful. She's creative. She's got so many talents. Christina, thank you so very much for being with us today. Everybody go check out Go Figure Bar and come to the show next week. We are going to have a lot of fun. I have a little bit of a something creative going on next week again. So join us next week for Defy and Hustle with Noreen Ehrlich. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.